I'm not going to recount everything from last week. But as you may recall, I was saying that although the Lord was undoubtedly with Joseph, I did wonder if Joseph was with the Lord. This wasn't, and it still is not, a criticism of the young Joseph. And I think we came to the correct conclusion that after looking at his family history, and particularly after God had taken all of Jacob's family and told them to go to Bethel, Joseph was well aware of God's power and his control in all things. I have no doubt at all that Joseph had a strong belief in the God of his father and forefathers, and I'm sure this belief helped him when times got difficult. However, there needed to be a change. There needed to be a realization and a trust. In fact, a personal faith in God, the God that he believed in. It's a bit like, if you can bear with me for a minute, you live in an apartment building, 10 floors or more, and there is a lift. Now, you know all about that lift. You may have even seen other lifts before that lift. You know that it's an integral part of the building which is standing solid and sure. You know how it works. It will take you to any of the floors in the building. You've seen others use it. You see others use it day by day, and they go in and they're not afraid of anything. They're happy, they're talking, they're discussing anything, and they are travelling in the lift. You've seen the safety certificate. You know that it's been tested. You know that it is not going to fail. You totally believe that. But you still take the stairs. You still take the stairs. Belief in everything that we've spoken about and everything we know, belief in this wonderful Lord who is ours, is great. Please, please keep believing. Please keep searching. Please keep wondering. Please keep asking questions. But at some point, take the step into the lift. Take that step of faith that turns all of that belief and knowledge into a wonderful relationship with the Creator of the universe, who you know you can talk to at any time, and you can ask anything of him, and he will always, always look after you and be by your side. And this is what had to happen, I believe, to Joseph. And something like this must have happened during his time of travelling to Egypt with the Ishmaelites. He'd been sold into slavery, probably the worst situation he could find himself in. I was wondering whether they, you know, how badly they treated him. They probably didn't treat him that badly, because here was a young, strapping, handsome man. So the last thing they wanted to do was deliver him full of bruises and cuts. And they wanted him to get the price that he deserved. So he probably was treated reasonably well. Nevertheless, he was in chains or ropes or whatever. And he gets to Egypt and he's sold to Potiphar. And at the start of Genesis 39, it says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials," so he wasn't just an ordinary man, "the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites and who had taken him there." And then he got these words: "The Lord was with Joseph." We hadn't heard this before while he was in Canaan. We'd done our own research and we decided that yes, we could believe that the Lord was with Joseph because of everything we said. But now, it's being stated absolutely clearly. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And this is the bit I like. And when the master saw that the Lord was with him and gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favour in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household and he trusted to his care everything he owned. Why? Why did Potiphar see that the Lord was with Joseph? He didn't even know who the God of Israel was. He would be familiar with deities and gods and all sorts of things that the Egyptians were famous for. But this was the God of Israel. I suppose he might have thought, well, everyone has to have a God, so he's obviously got a God, so fine. But God, I believe, worked in Potiphar so that he could see that the Lord was with Joseph. God was therefore at work. And I believe that at some point, as Joseph arrived in Egypt, God took control and revealed himself not only to Joseph, not only allowing him to make that final step of faith, but it took it on so that other people could see what was special about this young man. And from wondering why God seemed to have abandoned him, he now realized that it was the complete opposite. And he could go on now, go forward with absolute confidence that the Lord was truly with him, and now he had to just follow with faith and trust. And the immediate result of this was success. Success that was obvious to Potiphar and probably to others. I wonder why he particularly noticed Joseph. And there was a commentator who said this. I don't subscribe to it, but this is what he said. Potiphar, as an Egyptian, probably didn't know about the God of Israel, the God that blessed Joseph. While he may have noticed Joseph's success and the blessings that seemed to follow, he likely attributed this to personal skills rather than divine intervention of the God of Israel. No, don't think that's the case. I think the Lord was making things very clear to Potiphar, even if he didn't understand it. Or was there just a simpler explanation? You can't discount the fact that Joseph might have even talked to Potiphar about his God. Maybe not at the beginning, but sooner. Who knows? All we know is that here we have an Egyptian paying witness to the fact that the Lord is with Joseph. And we know that Joseph is now with the Lord. So how does that apply to us? Well, we touched on this last week. Firstly, we learned that God will always use the most unlikely of people and the most unlikely circumstances to work out his purpose for us and for everyone else and for the world. And claiming to be unworthy of his service or without the necessary knowledge or abilities is not an option. It won't wash. We may not have any idea about what is actually happening in our personal lives. And it's not enough just to believe that the Lord is with us. We need to have faith to trust him and be prepared to follow wherever he leads. When knowledge, skills, abilities, or anything else is required to fulfill his plan, he will provide them. It's as simple as that. So it's no good saying, well, no, it can't be me. I don't know. No. If the Lord wants to use you and your life, accept the fact that you're going to be able to do it. And you should do it. Because if you do, you will be successful. And others will notice. But it really is up to us, because he always gives us that choice. You can either proudly proclaim that the Lord is with you, the Lord is with me. That's why I am who I am, that's what I say what I say, that's what I do, why I do what I do. Or you can choose to be silent and therefore deny it by your silence. But don't say, oh, well, I wouldn't know what to say. He will tell you what you have to say. He will tell you what you have to do. Now, another key to Joseph's amazing maturing faith is the way that he deals with Mrs. Potiphar. I said to you when I closed last week, Potiphar was cool and so fine, but his wife would never toe the line. It's all there in chapter 39 of Genesis. I will be referring to Mr. Tim Rice later as well. But look what he says to her. When she's finally really pushed him to his limit, Joseph said, "My master has held nothing from me except you, because you are his wife." Now, he might have said after that, "After all your husband has given me, how could I possibly betray him in this way?" But he didn't. "My master has held nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" That was what Joseph was worried about. Not about appeasing Potiphar or staying in his good books or not betraying him. He knew it was God that had given him everything, not Potiphar. And he would trust God whatever it was going to cost him. He wasn't concerned. So he ended up in prison. And we read, while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. Surprise, surprise. He showed him kindness and he granted him favour in the eyes of the prison warder. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Here we go again. Just as God made Potiphar understand about Joseph, he was now doing exactly the same with the prison warder. God's plan was being worked out. Joseph was having success because he was following God's plan. And two special prisoners were put under Joseph's care. Pharaoh's chief cupbearer and Pharaoh's chief baker. Now, these guys both had dreams on the same night that they couldn't understand and which concerned them, and they wanted them interpreted. And they came to Joseph. Now, you remember when Joseph had his own dreams. He just recounted those dreams to his family and particularly to his brothers, and we know where that led. But he gave God no credit at that time for his dreams, because he didn't realize at that time that God was in command of all those dreams and was telling him and revealing himself to him. But this time, what's the first thing he says when they come to him for an answer? He said, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" God's going to tell you what these dreams mean. So tell me. Tell me what they're like, what you dreamed. He certainly was, I think, considering his own dreams. And he's starting now to appreciate the full value of those dreams. Because if you think about it, everything he was told in his dreams has not come true. In fact, it's gone entirely the other way. So perhaps he was a bit concerned about what God meant by it. But now, he's appreciating things a bit more. So here he was, knowing that God could use him to reveal the meaning of these two dreams, he does. Good news for one, bad news for the other. And in 3 days' time, 3 days later, they both came true. And we know the outcome, don't we? That the cupbearer was restored to his position and the baker was impaled on a stake. Not a lot of difference, really. And of course the cupbearer was overjoyed and promised to put in a good word about Joseph to Pharaoh, but because he didn't, actually perhaps that was a little slip on Joseph's part. Claiming to trust God in all things and then trying to find his own way out of prison. Yeah, come. Yeah, tell Pharaoh. Tell Pharaoh. Well, it didn't work. And it didn't work because his escape from prison didn't conform to God's timetable. And I think that's another lesson that we find it very hard to swallow. A solution to a situation that appears obvious to us may not be part of God's plan and therefore will often fail or fall short of expectations. Anyway, it was 2 years later when the cupbearer finally spoke to Pharaoh, and then we know what happened next. There was a summons from the palace. And I like this bit. So when he had shaved and changed his clothes, Joseph came before Pharaoh. I expect he was still in his chains, but at least he was clean shaven and looking a little bit smarter. And Pharaoh says, I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Once again, Joseph claims no credit for this ability. In fact, he says, I cannot do it. But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. So Pharaoh recounts his dream. And this is when I will go back to Tim Rice for a short while. So Pharaoh said, I was wandering along the bank of the river when 7 fat cows came out of the Nile. And right behind these fine, healthy animals came 7 other cows. And they were skinny and vile. I know I'm getting this right. Do you know why I'm getting this right? Because Lindsay is nodding and smiling. Because she knows these words just as I do. Then the thin cows ate the fat cows, and I thought it would do them good. But it didn't make them fatter, like such a monster supper should. The thin cows were as thin as they could ever be. This dream has got me baffled, babe. Joseph, tell me, what does it mean? Then he relates another dream about corn with a similar theme. And when he's finished, Joseph makes it quite clear. The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. He has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. So he hasn't said immediately, oh, this is what your dream means. He's just saying, God has sent you these dreams, Pharaoh, because he's going to tell you what's going to happen and what you've got to do. So Joseph stands there and he says, 7 years of bumper crops are on their way. Years of plenty, endless wheat and tons of hay. Your farms will boom. There won't be room to store the surplus food you grow. After that, the future doesn't look so bright. Egypt's luck will change completely overnight. And famine's hand will stalk the land with food an all-time low. Noble king, there is no doubt what your dreams are all about. All these things you saw in your pajamas are a long-range forecast for your farmers. And I'm sure it's crossed your mind what it is you have to find. Find a man to lead you through the famine with a flair for economic planning. But who this man will be, I just don't know. Well, Pharaoh was flabbergasted, I would imagine. And he says, well, stone of crows. This Joseph is a clever kid. Who'd have thought those 14 cows could mean the things he said they did? Joseph, you must help me further. I have got a job for you. You will lead us through this crisis. You will be my number two. Whew. Hold that picture in your mind. We're in the court of one of the most powerful rulers of the time. And there he is, looking down from his throne to a young man he has never met before. A man who only for hours before was a captive in one of his dungeons, is now facing a king and telling him that he cannot interpret dreams and only God can reveal the meaning, and the God of Israel that Pharaoh had never heard of. How long do you think that audience went on for? I was thinking about it. It couldn't have been more than an hour, 2 hours tops. But the outcomes are both surprising and amazing. So we've heard the entertaining story from Tim Rice. So let's consider the actual conversation between Pharaoh, Joseph and God. Then I've looked at verses all the way through this particular chapter, but I'm just picking out a few of the verses at this point. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. And then later he says, it's just that I've said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. And then later, the reason for the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms, is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And then Joseph outlines a plan of action that he thinks ought to be in place. And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so the country may not be ruined by the famine. This young man, probably still in his prison chains, in front of the king and all the officials of his court, and he is telling them what needs to be done. Well, it worked. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? That's Pharaoh talking. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Wow. Amazing. Unbelievable. No. Why? Let's say it together. The Lord was with Joseph. And Joseph was with the Lord. Joseph prospered. He had everything we might expect of a person in such an exalted position. Pharaoh even gave him a wife, a very special wife. But Joseph didn't indulge himself with the trappings of this office. He didn't relax. He didn't just sit back and enjoy being served and honoured. He still considered that he had work to do. And so instead, he went throughout the land of Israel to oversee everything that needed to happen. How did he know what to do? How was he able to suggest such a plan to Pharaoh? The only experience he had was herding sheep and looking after some other slaves in someone's household. How did he know? How did he learn about the logistics, the economic implications of his plan? Well, once again, the answer's absolutely obvious. The Lord provided everything he needed. And that's the same for us. Go to Proverbs 3, verse 5. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding." We are encouraged to rely on God's wisdom and guidance rather than in our own knowledge or abilities. And the next verse states that in all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. Now Joseph certainly discovered all that to be true, and look how it turned out. So one last excerpt from the musical. 7 summers on the trot were perfect, just as Joseph said. Joseph saw that food was gathered, ready for the years ahead. 7 years of famine followed. Egypt didn't mind a bit. The first recorded rationing in history was a hit. Back in Canaan, the future looked rough. Jacob's family were finding it tough. For the famine had caught them unprepared. They were thin, they were ill, they were getting scared. In the end, they decided to go up to Egypt to see Brother Joe. So they all bowed before Joseph's feet. "Mighty Prince, give us something to eat." And Joseph found it a strain not to laugh, because not a brother among them knew who he was. "I shall now take them all for a ride." After all, they did try fratricide. Yes, remember that first dream of Joseph's? And now this, all kneeling before him. It's suddenly come true. I'm sure that wasn't wasted on him. I'm sure they didn't even think about it, the others. And the story of Joseph now goes on, and there is so much more to learn in certain parts of it, but sadly I'm running out of time. So specifically what happens next is very important and should be the subject of a sermon in the future, but now we need to understand just the one thing that happened at this particular time, that Joseph used his anonymity, the fact that they didn't recognise him, to discover more about what had happened in the time that he'd been away. So he wanted to know more about his father, he wanted to know more about some of the other members of the family, his brothers, but in particular he wanted to know about his dear younger brother Benjamin, because he was his one true brother, biological brother. And he also wanted to see whether the rest of the brothers had changed. Had they learned to deal with things differently? They were a rather awful lot. Had they improved? Had they got any saving graces amongst them? Well, yes, I think he did discover that. And as we know, although it took a while, Jacob and the whole of the family came to join Joseph in Egypt. In chapter 46 of Genesis, God speaks to Jacob in a vision, saying, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. I will make you into a great nation there." And Pharaoh welcomed them. Pharaoh welcomed them. In chapter 47, he says to Joseph, "Your father and brothers have come to you, and the land of Egypt is before you. settle your father and your brothers in the best part of the land, and if you know of any of them with special abilities, put them in charge of my own livestock. It's a way to welcome immigrants, isn't it? The Israelites came to Egypt. But this was just one more step in the overall journey they'd been promised. And everything seemed fine at this stage, but it wasn't going to stay that way. Remember that verse in Genesis 15 that I spoke about last week, when God was talking to Abraham. Know for certain that 400 years, that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in the country not their own, and they will be enslaved and ill-treated there. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions. God was at work, and the plans for the people were still and are still in progress. Have you realized yet what his plans are for you? I mentioned last week how, in researching everything I've been talking about, I realised that in so many pivotal points in my life, things happened that I thought were purely coincidental and fortunate. But I no longer think that way, because I know that the Lord has been with me all the time, even when I didn't realise it, and certainly when I didn't deserve his care and attention. And that's been the thing that I have found most wonderful in my life, in my personal realisation. When we were at All Saints for the Good Friday service, I was in the group of singers at the front, and it was not strange for me, but it was unusual for me. I had the words in front of me, because I don't always have the words in front of me. And much as I appreciate the usefulness of projected words, they're never there for that long, are they? You don't always get a chance to read some of them. But there I was, and I was looking at the hymn sheet, and the hymn is "In Christ Alone." And there were two lines that just came out as if they'd been highlighted. From life's first cry to final breath, Jesus commands my destiny. Even before I knew it, even before I knew him. But then that's what happens when you invite Jesus into your life. He comes to stay, and he promises to stay. He says, "I will never leave you." What a wonderful Saviour we have. Amen.